You are listening to weekly messages from Austin Christian Fellowship. For more information about ACF, visit acfellowship.org.
If you do not know me, my name is James Isaac. I am the student pastor here at ACF Four Points, and I'm excited to be here tonight. I want to kind of cue you in to what we are going to be doing this evening. It's a little bit different than a normal Saturday night service here at ACF. As you walked in, you probably noticed some tables in the four corners here. And what we want to do on this holiday weekend is we're on the gateway into fall and into a new chapter, a new season, is we want to spend some time this evening in communion. And to do that, I want to just spend a little bit of time setting that up and sharing with you something that the Lord has laid on my heart as we prepare our hearts for communion. The word restoration comes to mind. Restoration. When I was a kid, my parents, they came to me and they told me that they had sold our home in the suburbs and that they had found a house in the country. Now, I say house. That might be a overly generous adjective. Upon driving out and seeing this piece of, really it was the real estate that led him to, the actual property that led him to this place, but upon driving out and seeing the house that they had bought, it left much to be desired. This house was built in the 1950s, and it was not touched since then, and it was far from what many would deem to be livable. But because of the land that it occupied, there was tremendous potential for what it could become. Now, many potential buyers had, the realtor had told them, many potential buyers had passed on it because they saw, they simply saw the house as it was in its current state and not what it could be. And you see, what happens is the devil likes to do that same thing in our lives every day. You see, he wants you to look at your current state. He wants you to assess where you're at. And he wants you to determine that there is no value in what you see. And what the devil does is he tends to bring up things from our past, I've noticed. He tends to bring up things from the past. Well, how could you really follow Christ, or how could you really have this desire to follow Christ when remember when you decided to do this? Remember when in this phase in your life you were walking far from God and you wanted nothing to do with anything of the Bible, or remember that time in your life where it was just a really dark period and nobody ever really knows about what happened. You know, and I know, but nobody else really knows. You see, what the devil does is he tries to get you to devalue yourself in that situation. Or I've noticed that even at times he will come into your presence, and what he'll say is yeah, you claim to want to walk this walk, you claim to want to follow Christ, you claim to want to be in communion with him, but have you seen what's going on in your life right now? The situation that you're attempting to handle, but you're really not doing a very good job of. And you see, what the devil does is he likes to come alongside of us, and his whole objective is to cause us to devalue who we are in our identity in Christ. And yet Jesus comes along, and I love this, and Jesus comes along, and if we allow him, what he does is Jesus assesses what is broken. And he brings new value to things that you and I deem incurable or unfixable. Jesus says, yes, this area in your life that you have deemed to be unvaluable, Jesus comes along, and if we allow him to, he assesses it and he brings new value into our life. You see, Jesus is in the business of restoring people who have deemed themselves of no value. We see this all throughout the gospel. Matthew chapter 26, verse 6. It says this. Now when Jesus was at Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster flask of very expensive ointment, and she poured it on his head as he reclined at the table. Now I want to pause there, and I want to give just a little bit of background to set the stage for the significance. We can easily read these two verses and continue on, which we will, but I want to pause because there is significance, huge cultural and spiritual significance within these two verses. Now, Jesus was in Bethany, and Bethany is a small village. Today, it's located in modern-day West Bank, but it's a small village on the eastern slopes of the Mount of Olives, and it's directly east of Jerusalem, just a short distance from the epicenter of the Temple Mount and all the buzz that has occurred in Jerusalem. And it was here that Jesus was lodging after his return to Jerusalem. Jesus had spent a period of time in the Galilean region and had come back down to Jerusalem, had his triumph return to Jerusalem, and it was during this period of time that Jesus was staying in Bethany. And this was all centered around the buildup of the Jewish Passover and the soon-to-be buildup of events that would lead to Jesus' trial, execution, and burial. Now, here in Bethany, Jesus receives the invitation to attend a party, a dinner party. Now, it's very possible that this was in connection with the holiday celebration that was the Passover. Jesus also had many friends in Bethany. We read about Mary and Martha and Lazarus, who also lived in Bethany. Now, the dinner that Jesus was invited to was being held in the home of a man that was identified as Simon the leper. Now, at such times and at such dinners and events, what would happen is there would be outsiders that would come. And the outsiders would gather around the house, and those who were in need or those who were in want would come, and they would lie in the house to listen and to hopefully gain something from this dinner. And oftentimes they even come into the outer walls or the inner walls of the house on the outside walls, and they begin to sit and just listen and hopefully gain some scraps from the table of this magnificent feast. Now, in line with the cultural customs during this time, women were not permitted to be at the table as men ate and conversed. Now, within these two verses, we see a very unique and countercultural image. Jesus is sitting at the table of a man who is known as a man to have or once had leprosy, and also there is the presence of a woman. Now, I want to highlight the significance of these two individuals. I want to start with Simon the leper. Now, leprosy was this flesh-eating illness that caused those to be inflicted with it, with the disease, to be shunned and ostracized in first century society. There would be leper colonies where literally those who were inflicted with this disease would be cast out from the mainstream society, and they'd be sent to these colonies in isolation where they would be avoid any contact with anybody who did not have the disease. And even after being healed, and many scholars speculate that Jesus, in fact, healed Simon, even after being healed, we see that this label, that this term was forever attributed to Simon. The scripture indicates Simon the leper, which indicates that even within his town of Bethany, even the surrounding areas, people still looked at Simon and they identified him as the leper. They identified this thing that had afflicted him at one time. It remained this big cultural taboo even to associate with those who had once been afflicted with the disease. Yet Jesus openly ate in the home of Simon. And it says that he lounged at his table. And I love the picture that this paints, because it really shows you the heart of who Jesus is. And it really shows you the heart of who he's calling each and every one of us to be. You see, Jesus restores those whom society has abandoned. Jesus restores those whom society has abandoned. Now, we don't necessarily see a lot of people in our present day walking around with leprosy. But there very much so is spiritual leprosy that is present in our churches and in our world today. Countless people today would identify as spiritual lepers. Their past has allowed others to view them almost negatively, or because of actions that they've done, or things that have occurred, or oftentimes, again, I said this in the beginning, what happens is the devil comes alongside and he tries us to devalue ourselves. Often what happens is in the case of spiritual lepers, is people isolate themselves from the rest of society, whether it's them or others doing it to them, and all of these things happen. And what happens is there's this label of unwant put upon these people. And I would venture to say that there are people even sitting in here today that could identify as a spiritual leper. So you know what? If the people around me only knew what I have done, if the people around me only knew what was going on in my household right now, if the people around me only understood the doubt that I have in my heart towards certain things, then I would be cast aside. I'd be ostracized. I'd be abandoned by all of society. On another real note, I know some of you have been hurt by people. Some of you have been abandoned by people that claim to have loved you. You feel like a spiritual leper. Here's what I want you to see today, is that Jesus doesn't care about that. He doesn't care about that. He didn't care about the stigma that was around lepers. He didn't care about the image or the perception of him being in the home of Simon. This is coming at a point in time where Jesus was at the height of his popularity. You have to remember, coming into Jerusalem, they were laying down coats and palm branches to celebrate his return, only a week later to be shouting for his crucifixion. But right in this time, Jesus is at the height of his ministry, and he did not care about perceptions. He didn't care about the cultural taboos. You see, Jesus restores whom society has abandoned. Jesus restores those who have disqualified themselves from following him and serving him. And I want you to hear this simple message today. If you've been at church any length of time, this is nothing new that I'm sharing with you tonight. It's simply a reminder. Jesus eats with sinful people. Jesus did life with sinful people. Jesus isn't interested in the past of the individual. He's not interested in the present. Jesus is only concerned about moving forward in the future. With Simon the leper, Jesus brought restoration. I was reading this, and I instantly thought of a few years ago. I was in Los Angeles, and we were working with this inner city organization, and it was similar to if you've been on an ACF missions trip, how a portion of the trip is focused on work-related projects. And this particular day, we arrived at the center, and they said, hey, in conjunction with bringing in short-term groups, they also had a discipleship program where they're taking people off the streets of L.A., people who are once in the gang life, people who are strung out on drugs, whatever the case might be, they're taking them in this program, and they're discipling them. And in many cases, the county, Los Angeles County, is like, it's mandatory. Either they go to prison or they go through this Christian faith-based discipleship program. It's incredible what they're doing. And this one particular day, we arrive, and they said, hey, we need you to go with Lupe, who was in the program. We said, we need you to go with Lupe and pick up some dirt that we're going to be spreading in this house that we're renovating. I'd never met Lupe before, but here we are. We get in this truck, and we're just flying down the freeway headed towards Pasadena. And I have to be honest with you, I looked over at for the first time I'm sitting there, and Lupe was no joke. Lupe look like if he wasn't following the Lord? I could not come back from this little excursion that we were going on. And hesitantly, I kind of say, hey, so man, what's your story? And he said, well, I actually just got out of prison after 25 years. And I'm instantly thinking, what crime would put you in prison for 25 years? It had to be something crazy. Yeah, something where somebody else probably got hurt. And he said, well, hey, listen, he's like, I was not a good person. And I grew up on the streets of L.A. I grew up, we'd get in gunfights with other gang members. Like, you think, yeah, like, you dream it, we did it, basically. I said, but the Lord got a hold of my life. And in prison, I found Jesus, I got out, and I realized I couldn't go back to that life. I checked myself into this program, and the Lord has been bringing restoration to my life ever since. Now, if that wasn't cool enough already, that night, they do a big church service. They've got this huge church right in the heart of L.A., and there's a couple thousand people that come out to this service. And at halfway through the service, they have this testimony time, and lo and behold, we're all sitting there, and all the discipleship students are there, and Lupe gets on stage with this other guy. And we're thinking, like, well, this is cool. Like, I just talked to him today. And he shared his story how these two had once been rival gang members and had shot at each other at one point, and now they're on this stage saying, we were once enemies of this world to one another, but now we're brothers in the Lord. And I'm telling you, that's restoration. That's restoration. That's what Jesus does. You see, he didn't care about the past. He didn't care about all these things that Lupe and his brother had done. He didn't care about that. But he brought restoration. And I'm sorry, no program of this world, no government sponsored, as much as we can lean on all of these things, none of that will achieve the results of what happens when Jesus gets in and restoration happens. You see, I love to view it in these terms, ACF and really the church collectively. We're not a museum. So often people come to church thinking it's a museum, people putting themselves at their best and putting on their finest. We're not a museum, we're a hospital. We're not a museum to just display the righteousness of men. In fact, the righteousness of men is but filthy rags in the sight of the Lord. That's not what ACF, that's not what the church is about. Rather, it's a hospital. We come alongside people to bring restoration, not through our power, but through the power of Christ. That's what Jesus does. Restoring the broken to be made new again. Now, the woman that comes into this story, they're there at the house of Simon. They're at this this great dinner, at this feast, and this woman comes in. Now again, there were people that would gather around, so the sight of a stranger coming in would not be abnormal, but a woman approaching the table violated every sort of cultural taboo during this time. Now, it's thought that the woman in this case was Mary, given the location, and in other passages, parallel passages, it really calls her out by name, Mary, the brother of Lazarus. Now, during the course of this meal, like I said, there were many that were gathered there listening and hoping to gain scraps from the table. But here's what I love about this woman. That she's not content sitting on the fringes. She desires a place at the table. And it's not to disrupt, it's not to go against the cultural norm. This woman is not content simply just sitting on the edges and gaining scraps. She wants a place next to Jesus at the table. Her desire is not to disrupt, but simply to anoint and to be in his presence. And there are those gathered at the house and at the table, including some of Jesus' disciples, who were not impressed by this display. In Matthew chapter 26, verse 8, it says this, "And when the disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, 'Why this waste? For this could have been sold for a large sum and given to the poor.' But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, 'Why do you trouble the woman? For she has done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with you, you will not always have me with you. In pouring this ointment on my body, she has done to prepare me for burial. Truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Jesus immediately jumps to the aid of this woman. Jesus, he immediately rebukes those who condemn this woman. You see, these other people who are gathered at this house, including some of his own disciples, of which in parallel passages, Judas is actually highlighted as being one of them, and Judas was an individual who was far more concerned about the material things than the spiritual things. But those gathered there, they were so focused on the material possession. Here this woman was, and it's speculated that the ointment that she poured out was equivalent to 1 year's worth of wages. She comes and she anoints Jesus with this ointment. And those gathered there were so repulsed. And the passages, the parallel passages really indicate their heart. It was not one of concern. But what they did is they were so disgusted, so repulsed by this. And in an attempt to bring it up, but kind of disguise it in righteousness, they said, well, how could this woman possibly do this? Think of all that resource could have done for the poor. Think of all that resource could have done for the needy. They were so focused on the material possession that they missed the spiritual impact. Furthermore, they viewed this act, her act of worship, as an act of negligence. But Jesus doesn't rebuke this woman. Jesus doesn't rebuke this woman, who, by the way, has no cultural context for being at this table. Rather, what does he do? He welcomes her to the table. See, here's what the devil does. Is yes, he tempts us, he puts in our mind this idea to devalue ourselves. But so often what he does is he will attempt time and time again to shift our focus away from the spiritual and onto the physical. Away from the spiritual and onto the material. It's exactly what happened with those gathered in this house at this party. They were so caught up in what they saw, in all that could have been, that they missed the spiritual impact. And you see, there's a lot of things that we look at. And we say, well, yes, the spiritual is important, but all of these material things, like, I need to focus on this because think of all the good that these material things can do. Like, yes, the spiritual piece, like, that's important, we all know it, but what about this? Like, you're missing this material thing. And if we're not careful, so often our gatherings in the church can end up being focused on the material things and all of these other things that our back is turned to the spiritual things. And we're thinking, well, yeah, that's important, but we've got to focus on all of this. And that mindset creeps into our daily lives and into our professions. And I'm not for 1 minute speaking against material things. I'm not speaking against monetary value and things. But what happens so often, and I believe this is a trick of the enemy, is that he's constantly turning our heads to look away from the spiritual and on to all of these other things, saying, you know what, like, there'll be time for that later, but focus on this now. And what Jesus does is he comes and he tells them actually the opposite. He says, listen, all of these things, all these material things that you're so worried about, like, they're going to be there, but I'm with you for a short period of time. And here's what I want us to understand tonight. The time that we've been given, the circles that we run in, is this beautiful gift. And we continually think to ourselves, I have time. I have time. I'll get to that. I have time. I'll get to that. But what Jesus does is he calls everybody out in this room and he says, listen, now's the time. Now's the time. Mary could not wait to get to the table. And you notice what Jesus says? He doesn't say, hey, Mary, let the men finish here. Let's finish the meal and then you can come. Now he says, come to the table now. All are welcome at the table. Culture and society will often influence us in our decision to abandon what is valuable for the sake of being with Jesus at the table. You know, I'm guilty of this far too often. We abandon disobedience for comfort. We abandon our sense of tithing, giving to the Lord for the sake of financial stability. All of these things. We could go down this long list. I don't claim to be being this person standing up here as somebody who's got it all figured out. I'm simply saying that we have to hit pause. Jesus hit pause during this dinner. He said, listen, you guys, your priorities are out of whack here. You've got to focus in on really what's before you here and now. You know, with Simon, there was restoration. But with this woman, there was invitation. And these are the things that Jesus extends to each and every person. I love that view of the leper and the woman. Two people who should not have been at the table with Jesus. Yet they are a pivotal part in explaining the mission of Jesus, the attitude of Jesus, and really his call upon each and every one of us. Restoration and invitation, these are the things that Jesus extends to us. Doesn't matter your background, doesn't matter your past. Doesn't matter the things that you might have found yourself in at one time. Jesus is in the business of restoration and invitation. Restoration from sin and invitation to something far greater. Now, this woman's actions are a foreshadow of something greater that is about to come. Just days later, before his execution and burial, Jesus would institute the act of communion as he was gathered with his disciples. I'm going to ask our worship team to come up here in a bit. We're going to go into a time of communion. But I want to just read through what Jesus communicated. This is in the same, continuing on in Matthew chapter 26. Again, this is just days later as they're gathered in the upper room in Jerusalem. Jesus is in agonizing turmoil. He knows what is about to happen. In fact, there's verses on where he's pleading with the Father saying, if there's any other way, let's do that. See, ultimately, your will, not mine, be done. And they're gathered in this room. Jesus knows what's about to happen. And in Matthew chapter 26, verse 26, it says this. Now, as they were eating, Jesus took bread, and after blessing it, broke it and gave it to the disciples, and said, take, eat. This is my body. And he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink of it, all of you. For this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink again of this fruit of the vine until the day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. I love this. Jesus, we read about this in first century, and Jesus is waiting in anticipation for this to happen in his Father's kingdom. Now, communion is a sacred act of remembering what Jesus Christ did for each of us. And he outlines it quite clearly here. The bread represents his body, which was beaten and bruised. The cup, his blood that was shed and poured out for us. And God, who's a perfect God, And as a just God, requires our sin to be paid for. There's a lot of people that could say, well, why couldn't God just forget about the iniquities? Why couldn't God just forget about sin? Why did he require there to be the death of his son? That doesn't sound like a good God. God is a perfect God. God is a just God. And to simply forget about the sin, to simply forget about the iniquity without payment would mean that God is actually not a just God and therefore not a perfect God. And quite frankly, not a God that any of us would want to serve. And therefore, the restitution for sin was required. That restitution, prior to Christ, rested on the shoulders of the individual. Yet Jesus, who the scriptures record, was blameless and without sin, perfect in every way. In willingness and total obedience to God, sacrificed himself for us to make restitution for our sin. He became the atonement. Now, communion is our act of worship in remembering what Jesus has done on our behalf. And here in a moment, we're going to take communion. The elements are on the tables in the four corners in the room. And here's what I want to leave you with, because this paints this beautiful picture in Matthew chapter 26. And this same invitation that was extended in the house of Simon to the woman that was there is extended to you and I. It's the invitation to come to the table. And that invitation is extended to all who have received Christ as their Savior. Jesus welcomes us at the table through the worship of communion. I'm going to pray in the worship team, and we're going to go into a song of worship. I want to encourage you guys, take communion as a family. Go to the table. We're not going to lead it from on stage. We really want this to be a time of reflection, a time of worship, a time to remember the sacrifice that Christ did on the cross, but also that invitation that he gives to each and every one of us.